Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I do interviews with entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And the truth is that the first time that I had an opportunity to interview today's guest, his name is Joe DeSena. He is the founder of Spartan is this race that puts people through all kinds of obstacles. The first time I had an opportunity to interview him, I said, I'm not so sure. I thought it was a small business. And to be honest with you guys, as a runner, I thought that this stuff was just novelty. I used to go do long distance races and I would see people climbing on obstacles and think they're probably not good athletes. They're looking for something to, you know, to entertain themselves. That's fun. That's not real work. Fucking A, I was wrong. I was wrong. First of all, this is a huge business. I had no idea that Spartan was so big. And number two, I think Spartan Race is harder than a marathon. It could really kick your ass. And so I sent a letter of apology, an email of apology to Joe. And I said, Joe, I underestimated so much around Spartan. Can I please have you on here to do an interview? And he said, yes. And then I think he was messing with me. And I want to find out about that here in this interview. We're going to talk about how he built this race into this thing that's huge, a business and also a movement, and find out if he messed with me. And we're going to do it thanks to two sponsors. The first will help you send out your email right. It's called Active Campaign. And the second is a brand new one for me. And I'm going to see if Joe, the guy who's like Mr. Health Conscious, approves of it. It's Athletic Greens. I've never talked about them or tried them before. We'll talk about them both. Joe, welcome.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm a big green juice junkie. I got the kids on green juice for the last 5-6 years. So.
All right, I'm going to bring this up and ask you because I know you have sharp opinions about what people put in their bodies. But let me ask you this. I scheduled this interview. There are days when I scheduled the interview. The day of the interview, you rescheduled. I scheduled it again. The day before, you canceled. I scheduled it again. The day – I think you were fucking with me.
I was.
You were. Talk about that.
I just needed to know that you were serious. I can't just be interviewed by just anybody. I got to know that you're one of these people – that no matter what the obstacle is in front of you, you just don't stop. So I told Susan, who works for me,
yes.
I said, listen, when we got to do these interviews or whatever media, just fuck with them. Just cancel. Look, you know, Michael Phelps' coach used to break his goggles purposely, used to screw up his plane tickets, used to mess with his duffel bag. And so that when he would get to a competition, he would have to deal with that adversity. So look, you may end up hating me because of all these cancellations or last minute changes, but it makes you better. And my job on earth is to make people better.
So the reason that I sense that that's what was going on is I read your book. I bought the audiobook. So I heard the book on my way to a triathlon. And one of the most painful things that you talked about in there is in one of your past races, people got to the finish line. And you know where I'm going with this, right? Can you talk about that? What shape did they get into in the finish line? And then what did you do to them?
Yeah, so I learned early on in my own racing career that the thing that messes with people the most is moving the finish line, right? Who moved my cheese? And so when you move the finish line on people, you just can't deal with it because you've worked all these hours, all these moments in your head to get to a place where you finally can taste victory and then it moves. And we would do that. I put on a race called a death race, if that's the race you're referring to.
Yeah.
And we would move the finish line, not once, not twice, but over and over and over. But what happened that I didn't anticipate was over the decade long of putting on this event, the participants, almost like bugs that were being treated with antibiotics, they got stronger. They started to know what the tactics were that we were going to use to fuck with them. So when the race was actually over, they didn't accept it. So I, you know, literally we packed up, it's Sunday afternoon, the race is over, insurance is done, we like, go home, I'm going home, I'm going to sleep, they're not stopping, they're going to go back out, want to do it again, this last task that they failed on, these 8 or 9 people, and they want their medals. In this case, it was a skull that we were giving away, and I was like, no, you don't understand, the race, it's, there's no fucking, like, it's over. And they were in no shape to even continue anyway. One guy had no shoes. They were torn off. He had duct taped his feet. These people were broken, men and women. And they went anyway. They said, no, we're going to hike into the woods. We're going to do the 18 miles. We're going to do the swim. We're coming back. We want our finish. And like I said, the skull. And I, for the 10th time, I said, no, you don't understand. It's over. I'm going. And I finally, I said, you know what? Fuck you. I'm going to bed. I don't care what you do. So I go to bed. My wife sees these people walk off our property and head into the woods. And she wakes me up and she's like, Joe, they're going out there. You know, we don't have insurance. I said, what do you want me to do? They're crazy. I don't know what to do. They're unstoppable. They're like a virus that, you know, the antibiotics not killing it anymore. I don't know what to do.
Now they're on their own, though.
They're on their own. So she wakes me up and we got to go out there. And so we jump in a car and I got to drive 40 miles around to get to the other side to where they said they were going. Now I got to go into the woods. I'm exhausted. I haven't slept in 3 days at this point because I've been putting on this race. I run into the woods. I'm looking for them. Well, they stumble upon my wife first in the car. And these are big guys and girls. Like, they're tough as nails. And there's a bunch of them. I think there's 8 of them. I don't know how many there are. There's quite a few of them. And they're now getting ready to do the swim. They're going to redo the swim that they failed on, which is why they didn't get the finisher's skulls to begin with. And she says, the race is over. I told you guys 18 miles ago, get in the car and we're going. It's over. I don't have insurance. You're putting my family at risk. And one guy says, excuse me, ma'am. You know, I'm doing this for people with cancer. And she just rips them a new you know what. And they put their heads down. And this little she's probably pregnant at the time, my wife. Pregnant woman.
Flip-flops from what I remember.
Flip-flops. Gets them all in the car and they drive back to the house and go home.
but this is because this is what you do to people. And by the way, I hear some noise in the background that I'm guessing that's your computer. Can you mute that thing that's dinging every time you get an email?
I would love to mute it. I don't know how to do that. So I'm going to click on this thing on the top right of this Apple computer here, notifications, right?
My guess is that let's do that notification. My guess is that's Outlook.
I don't know. No, do not disturb.
All right, let's do that. And that's the other thing that surprised me, that you're a guy with this big business and digital is something that you told our producer a while back. It still makes you uncomfortable.
I'm very uncomfortable around computers and all this stuff.
I just can't imagine that you would have, as a guy who's so focused, you would have that dinging going off all day long. That would freaking drive me nuts. I'd toss the computer out the window. No.
I think, you know, I grew up in a neighborhood next to Kennedy Airport, and there are planes flying in and out nonstop. Within a few weeks, you don't hear the planes anymore, right? Because it just becomes part of your environment. And I think I am bombarded by so much noise and phone calls and emails and podcasts and you name it all day, every day. People walking in my kitchen. There was 5 people in my kitchen a few minutes ago. You called me. It's just one big blur.
All right. Let's understand how you got here. I mean, I appreciate you doing this. I know you just got off of a flight and you couldn't even find your toothbrush. You found a way to clean up so that we could do this. To understand where here is your revenue. This is the part I underestimated. Can you give me a sense of what revenues were, say, 2016, last year?
Yeah, I can't tell you exactly, but you could do the math. So it's a million participants a year.
Mm-hmm.
We average about $100 per participant around the globe. And you could also figure that we do a bunch of business in clothing and merchandise, and we do a bunch of business in sponsorship and partnerships and a bunch of business in media.
So over $100 million.
That's what they said.
Fucking A, dude. For a guy who at one point you had to beg your friends or ask your friends for money, this is amazing. Let's go back and see how you got here. You were on Wall Street first. What did you do on Wall Street?
I was mixing cement I was selling fireworks.
Selling fireworks in New York?
Fireworks in New York as a kid.
Where, like then, Chinatown or to your friends?
No. I was selling them in Queens. And, you know, it was a lot of organized crime where I grew up. And fireworks were one of the things they sold. And I was able to get my hands on them at, you know, my pre-teens, and I did pretty well with that. And then from there, I started a swimming pool cleaning business, which turned into a construction company. And then I sold that. And then a friend begged me to go to Wall Street because he saw my work ethic. And so I went to Wall Street and I ended up building a trading firm. And then I sold that. And I bought a farm. I'm on the farm right now talking to you from the farm in Vermont. And man, if I have a signal, I should show you this farm. It would blow you away. Anyway, this farm is just epic. It's 700 acres in the middle of Vermont. And And while I was here, I had been participating in races for a long time. It was my way to clear my head. That was my vacation.
Sorry to interrupt, but before we go into that, let me see if I understand. The pool cleaning business, according to Wikipedia, you sold it for $500,000. Is Wikipedia right?
Wikipedia is right, yes.
Okay. I think they might have your name wrong. They've spelled your name as two different words, your last name, but on Skype you've got it as one.
So it should be two different words. My wife holds that's my digital incompetency.
Okay, all right. And then this thing that you did on Wall Street, what's the brokerage firm? What did you guys trade? You were trading derivatives?
Derivatives and equities, yeah, for banks and hedge funds.
Okay, yeah. What kind of derivatives?
So mostly equity, single stock option derivatives.
Okay, so just the right to buy or sell a stock.
Correct.
What made you so different from all the other guys in New York who were doing that?
I was exactly like all the other guys. There's no reason that Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley or Credit Suisse should have been our customer, except. I provided tremendous service. I was available 24 hours a day. We outworked everybody else. If we got a bad price in the market, we gave them the good price. We took a loss. I attribute success, if that is what you're trying to dive into here. I attribute success to that ability to go above and beyond what anybody else will do.
So what's an example of something you did back in the Wall Street days, other than being available 24/7? What else did you do?
Yeah. So
what's one time that you stretched?
Mm-hmm. So they, for example, on the Russell rebalance, which was a big rebalancing day of a bunch of securities, we were known to be the biggest player in the market. We could trade 300 million shares of stock on that day. Why? This tiny little firm. Why? Because we worked our asses off, right? We had communications into all the banks, all the hedge funds. We had information. There was nothing illegal about it. It was just that we built relationships that were so strong. Those bonds were so tight with all these different players in the market that we gave people an edge. And that edge meant that they were willing to pay us a penny or 2 pennies a share, or $1 or $2 a contract. And we had a hell of a business. And for me, it was a big deal because I was mixing cement and cleaning swimming pools just 5 years before that. So to be on Wall Street rubbing elbows with the big boys and big girls, I don't know, I felt like a big man on campus. It was an awesome run.
I've heard you say that you made a small fortune on Wall Street. What's the size of a small fortune at that point? We can say it because you lost it all, right? So what's the amount?
I did good. I did well. I was
multimillionaire?
I was doing very well.
On the personal side, I saw you at a dinner once. You were the center of attention at the whole thing because you tell these fantastic stories and you got this charisma.
Paying the bill.
What?
I was probably paying the bill. That's why I was the center.
No, you weren't. This was Jason Gaynard's mastermind dinners. Oh. That's another time where I said, what the fuck did I do? I didn't have this guy on. He's such a good storyteller. He's such an interesting life. Like, you're talking about someone was screwing with you. You decide to buy the property out from underneath him. You build a hotel. The thing that I was wondering, though, is you had this money at that age. You had the charisma. Were you dating a lot? Were you like fully in yourself? Or were you one of these schlebby guys in New York who had money but didn't even know how to say hi to the waitress?
You know, I think I always had a lot of energy. I'm not one to stay out late. I'm not incredibly sloppy. I would entertain a lot, but I would typically disappear. So I'd set up the table, I'd pay for everything, and then I'd sneak out because I really wanted to be up early. I'm a very productivity-driven person. I'm a one-woman guy. I had a girlfriend at a very young age for a long time, and then I met my wife, and so I'm not, yeah.
So you're getting things done. So you might bring together people for a dinner, pay for the dinner, just so everyone gets to know you and gets to know each other, and then you're sneaking off so you can get some rest, do your stretches and burpees, and wake up.
Yeah, I sneak out well before the night gets going. I mean, there were a few nights in there I can remember where I'd stay out late, but typically, yeah, I like to wake up. I'm a 5 a.m. person. I like to go get a giant bike ride down or a run or burpees or something.
And then if you're waking up at 5, what time do you go to sleep?
I'm in bed by 10, 11.
Okay. All right. Okay. So then you start doing these races, I understand it. You're running. You're doing Ironman. You're competing. Is it 12 Ironman events that you did?
21.
21. ultra marathons. You did the Badwater Ultra, which is so sick. I love reading about people who do it. And then you say, at some point, I've got to create my own race, sometime like 2005, according to my notes. Why did you say I want to create my own race? Why not just deal with what was there?
You know, I'm a serial entrepreneur, right? So I built I built the little firework business. Then I built the construction business. Then I was on Wall Street, and I can't help myself. I actually, on a daily basis, have to tell myself, no, no, we're not doing that.
What's an example of a business that you would have jumped on?
All day, every day, whether I want to write another book or I want to start another business, or I could be in a small town. I was in Vancouver yesterday. I told you we just moved to Vancouver. And I'm looking around saying, man, I could buy that piece of property. We're renting a house. I could rebuild that. And I don't need to. What am I doing? It's an addiction.
Well, you do have some kind of hotel or something, right?
I have a couple of hotels, small hotels.
Why are you running a hotel when you've got a $100 million business, a hotel in Vermont? Why do you need that agita?
Because I'm a crazy person.
That's it. It's just you need to do this. You have this idea. You're going to build it. You're going to sell it. You're going to do the whole thing.
Well, no. Let's go back a second. Hang on. So I sell the business on Wall Street, and yes, I get to Vermont. And I'm like, I got to be in a place where there's no outside stimulus because I'm going to be married and we're going to have a lot of kids. And if I'm in New York or I'm anywhere where there's like business opportunities, I'm going to be working 20 hours a day because I'm a maniac, right? I'm not going to focus on what's important. So we're going to move to the country. I'm going to have a barn. I'm going to chop wood, and I'm going to get myself away from those opportunities and that workaholism, because I just can't help myself.
Yeah.
So I get here, and that lasts about 3 days. And the general store is for sale.
They even have a general store. Okay.
Yeah, you got to have a general. Everybody's got to have a general store. And then there's the opportunity to start a wedding business. So I started a wedding business. And then if you have a wedding business and you have a general store, you definitely need a couple of hotels, because you got to, where you're going to put all the guests. So then that leads to a couple of hotels. And then I was like, well, we got to get people here. So I'll start putting on races. It'll be because I'm passionate about races, right? So I got weddings, I got events, I got corporate events. So I started putting on races, and then the race business just became the monster, the tiger by the tail.
I'm guessing you didn't expect it.
It's what?
You didn't expect it to be bigger any more than I would have if I looked at this back then.
I thought 50,000 people total were crazy enough to compete.
In the world, you mean?
In the world. Were crazy enough to compete in what I wanted to create. And I'm blown away. I mean, we'll have 1 million people this year. I'm blown away on the number of people. I think for the first world countries, and I really got a taste for it, you know, just last night. I flew in on a red eye, I told you. And I don't mean to be I don't want to take a swing at the US here, because it is my country and I love everybody here. But like, I lived in Tokyo last year, I lived in Singapore the year before that, and I'm living in Vancouver right now in Canada. And I landed last night in Portland. And Portland's a pretty healthy city. I got to tell you, in 5 seconds, you look around at body sizes and shapes, you know you're in America.
Yeah.
And it's not good. I mean, it was actually very sad, because you don't see that in Vancouver. I don't see it in Tokyo. You don't see it in Singapore. So there's a lot of people in the first world where we have it a little too easy and couches are too plentiful. And the TV remote controls have 600 channels, and popcorn's ready for you once, right? Like, we need to get off the couch, and we need to run and climb and crawl and swim. And so I guess there's a lot more than 50,000 people that need this, and they're feeling it. And I'm like a doctor. I'm providing a service here.
I read your book, Spartan Up, where you give specific stories about people who never walked really or ran and never exercised, signed up for one of the shorter races, and suddenly, because they signed up, all their friends knew that they signed up. They had to prepare, and because they prepared, they got in shape, and then they got the addiction. And I get that. And you know what? I want to ask you about the first race, the death race first, and the waiver that you had and how you even got insurance for it. But first, let me talk about my sponsor. This is called Athletic Greens. I'll be honest with you, Joe. The only reason that I'm trying Athletic Greens is because Tim Ferriss is on their site. And I know that guy is not recommending anything that he doesn't believe in. I am, since I'm being open with you, I was going to toss this before I got on camera with you. I was a little embarrassed, but I'm down to like 2 sodas a day, which is way too much. Look at this junk food.
What are you doing? You should not be drinking that. Are you crazy?
Why not? I felt like I needed energy, so I got my diet soda. I see you're really pissed. You're not even putting this on.
Fuck, are you crazy? You can't drink Diet Coke.
The reason I did it is I'm exhausted from having these two kids now. I have two babies.
No excuse. You should not be drinking diet. You shouldn't drink any soda.
I'm doing back-to-back interviews. So you're right. I used to have a salad in the middle of the day up until the last couple of weeks. I'm not feeding myself right. So I thought, let's try this. This is Athletic Greens. Why do you give your kids green juice? What is it about this stuff that you like? I've never had this before. If I don't like it, you're going to see it in my face instantly. But I'm going to put some in my cup. Why do you give your kids greens?
So here's the deal. We have a farm up here. I'm talking to you from the farm. And it's pretty hard farming, right? 14 years we've been trying to get stuff to grow. It looks good. Looks like a good consistency there. Mix it with the water, nice and green.
I'm supposed to be using – they gave me one of these.
Under a shaker.
These are the good kind, the shaker. For the next time I do an ad for them, I'll use it. But I'm just going to mix it in using a standard cup that I have here at the office.
So every day, my children, my oldest is 11, have been drinking the green juice every day. And the deal is, soil today is not as nutrient rich as it was, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. So even those of us, and very few of us, eat properly. Even those of us that eat properly are not getting all those nutrients. So the idea I had 10, 11 years was, we're going to buy the healthiest greens we could get, ground them up, mix them with water, just like you just did, and the kids are going to drink it every day. So that's my theory.
Let's try it right now.
A lot better than soda. What do you think?
Oh, it is good. You know what it tastes like? It tastes like beets, which is a subtle hint of beets, even though it's green. My mouth is actually watering as I drink it. It's good. Now, I can't figure out what it's supposed to do for me. I can see the list of things, ingredients. They're very proud of their ingredients. I looked it up on like all sorts of websites. People are very happy with the flavors. I wasn't shocked. But what is it supposed to do? Is it supposed to make me run faster? Is it supposed to – I'm looking at their website at the ingredients. I don't get it. They say there's prebiotics, probiotics. What is a prebiotic? What is a probiotic?
Yeah. So listen, you need good gut flora, right? Mm-hmm. Inside your stomach, you need all those bugs, the good bugs in there that are sending signals to the brain that are giving you all the things you need to digest foods properly and get everything you can out of foods that are getting your digestive system working properly. It was Hippocrates, right? He said, let food be thy medicine, medicine be thy food. And at the end of the day, if you're getting sick or you don't have energy, and it sounds like I'm doing this commercial with you, but I'm really not, it means there's something wrong with your stomach. So most of us are eating too much processed food. I can't believe you just showed me that can of soda. I'm thinking of jumping on a plane and coming to visit you.
You know what? I as I said, I was trying to hide that from you, and then I looked at your face and I thought maybe he's going to through memory, just say the things that he usually says when he has more energy. But I saw you really get upset. I saw your eyes, and then it was like this good nature upset because I've got to maintain my I'm a friendly person, but what the fuck is this guy doing?
Can't believe you pulled out a diet. So you don't even know. I fired people in our office for drinking soda.
Really?
You must have done the research and did that just to taunt me.
No, not about that. I did know for sure. That's why I checked with you. I said, look, I'm going to talk about Athletic Greens. I know that you're very serious about this stuff. Do you hate green juices like this? And so I wanted to check in. I usually don't mind if a guest does not like the product. I like talking about it, but I was a little afraid of your attitude about some of the food. So I'm glad that you said it was okay. All right, so no more sodas for me. Here, I'm actually going to make this promise to you right now. I've been buying them by the caseload since the last child was born, I swear. Delivered in the office, the receptionist puts it in the fridge in just the right spot for me. I'm going to promise right now, no more diet soda delivered in the office.
More so. Right now.
Just because of your face, I'm so I am a little scared. You've got this face that makes me feel like I'm going to get my ass kicked.
They say that about me, and I try to tell my wife, listen, I'm happy all the time. I just don't have a happy face.
It feels good-natured. You feel like you care, and you – even though you don't know me from Adam, I feel like you love me when you're saying this and you care, but still, what the fuck are you doing? I got this sense in your eyes, both sides of that.
I've been walking on the street, and I've pulled sodas out of people's hands that I don't know.
Really?
I'll take a cigarette out of somebody's hand. Just – are you – like, what the fuck are you doing, dude?
Wow. Has anyone ever hit you?
No. No, thankfully. Knock on wood.
All right. So you come up with this death race. The three-word waiver is what?
You may die.
Or I may die.
You may die.
You may die. So they sign the thing, and you get an insurance company to okay this? I didn't realize you had insurance.
We got insurance for it. It was very, very expensive. Under the condition that should they die, we bury them in the yard before anybody finds out. And no, we got insurance.
What do you put them through that you need a waiver that says that they could die?
We brought them right to the edge of death.
What's an example of something tough that you did?
Well, I mean, just simple things. Here's a great one. Here's a great one, actually. We brought them to a sub-50-degree small lake, large pond, small lake. They had to swim a one-mile loop. They were hypothermic in the first few minutes.
Really?
They were shaking. Yeah.
When you go hypothermia, what happens to your body?
You're shaking, right? Your blood is coming back into your core to try to keep your key organs alive. You're broken. You're not coherent. And so they experience hypothermia right away. They're swimming. We've got boats next to them, keeping an eye on them, just make sure nobody actually dies. And when they're done with that mile loop, they get back on the dock and they've got to spin a roulette wheel.
Okay.
That roulette wheel only has one slot that says you're done swimming. Every other slot says get back in the water.
So you give them hope and your chances are going to take it away.
Exactly. And so, you know, if there were 300 people competing, 299 of them had to get back in the water three times, 3 miles of swimming in this water. And one person, you know, landed on that slot that said, hey, you're done swimming, head on your hike. The amazing thing about that story was there were two 6-foot Marines and a woman that finished their third lap, but they were 4 minutes late. In other words, they had to be done with their third lap by 1 p.m. in the afternoon. Now it's 1:04. Rough numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
They went up to me and they said, okay, sir, we're ready. We're ready to continue. I said, we don't even continue. You're done. You missed the time cutoff. But it's only a couple of minutes. It was just a time. I don't give a fuck. You missed the time. You're out. We already invested 72 hours. Doesn't matter. You're out. The two Marines, these are two big guys. They hit the ground. They start crying in front of me. The woman, she's an amputee. She unscrews her leg, dumps the water out, screws it back on in front of me, and says, would you mind if I continue anyway, even though I'll be unofficial? As the two Marines are on the ground crying.
Ah, yeah.
So, like, amazing stuff. But we only get that kind of reaction and those really inspirational stories if we take people to the edge. And so that's what we do. You know, that's why I'm on Earth. I'm on Earth to drive people like you crazy. That it makes you better. Like if we were looking at a rubber band right here, right? And I stretch the rubber band, my job is to stretch you as far as this rubber band will go. And then as soon as you're about to break, I get a new rubber band. I stretch you even further. That's my job on Earth.
That's it. No one's ever hit you or done anything outrageous because of this?
I was almost killed. I had a bunch of guys surround me 1 year on top of the mountain. I told you we put on weddings here. My wife is holding a wedding, a really high-end wedding on our property. I'm on top of the mountain putting on this death race, and I hit my limit with these guys. They were pissed, and they surround me. Actually, when I'm done with this story, I'm going to tell you a really funny story. They surround me, and they're coming at me. And I'm like, what's up, guy? We want our skulls. This is bullshit. Guys, what are you talking about? The race is still continuing. People are going down the mountain. They're getting the body weight in rocks. You still got to do this. You got to do that. It's going to be at least another 10 hours. Bullshit. We want it now. And they're coming at me. And so I'm negotiating my way out of the situation. Unbeknownst to me, the participant that's just ahead of this group that's about to kill me stumbles down the mountain a good mile. And stumbles into this high-end wedding that my wife has. And he's got twigs hanging out of his head. He's looking, and he goes up to my wife. Literally, like the ceremony is going on. Excuse me, I'm looking for some rocks. Your husband told me they're near. It's near. My wife's like, I don't know what my husband's doing. Get back in the woods. We're in the middle of a wedding. So as these guys are about to kill me, this guy comes back up to the top of the mountain and he literally saves the day for me. and says, "Sir, I'm sorry. I was looking for the rocks. I think I found your wife and a wedding going on. I went in the wrong direction." That calmed the situation down. The guys left me alone and never to speak to me again for a year. I then get an email that says, "Joe, you got in our head. You broke us. We apologize. We want back in."
Wow.
And I've become great friends since. And so that's happened a few times where folks have, I pushed them, you know, just over the edge and only to come back later and say, "Hey, sorry for losing their cool."
You know what? I have a note here to ask you about your wife and how you met. I totally forgot the answer to that. I'm sure I knew it.
Yeah.
But that's the problem with letting these interviews go for so long. I barely thought that you were going to do this interview. I said, "I'm going to have an extra hour. I'll do some work here. And Joe's got me, but I'll get him before the end of the year." How did you and your wife meet?
So my wife, I met her at a race. A guy had talked me into a funny race. It was not something I was normally doing. And I decided to do the swim of the race, which I was not supposed to do. My team had me carrying a weight on the beach, doing a run. When I got done with the weight on the reach, I tagged my teammate who was going to do the swim. He went and did the swim, and I sat there and I looked at the water. And the one thing I'm afraid of is sharks. Like,
really?
It's a good thing to be fearful of. And so I like to face my fears. So I was like, "Fuck it, I'm going to swim it." So even though it didn't count, I just was going to go swim it anyway. When I got out of the other side of the swim, I had no shoes. Everybody else who was officially doing the swim had their shoes waiting for them on the other side of the swim. So I was running around on these sharp rocks and I was hopping on my feet and I meet this cute girl, gorgeous girl, my wife. And she says to me, "Hey, because I look weird, I don't have shoes on. What are you going to do? You're going to hurt your tootsies." Anyway, fast forward, I leave this race and it keeps playing in my head. One, she's gorgeous, but two, that's a word my mother's family would have used, tootsies.
Mm-hmm.
I got to follow up. So I call the place she said she worked. I only met her for a minute or so. And I asked the receptionist. I said, "I met this girl, Courtney, whatever. So we can give you her email." So I thought, I only got one shot with this email. Let me shoot an email. I'm going to have to put something in there that gets her to respond. So I wrote, "Listen, I'm building this all-female adventure racing team. And you looked really fit and really like you'd crush it on the team." And so she responded. And so then to play along with this elaborate lie I was putting together in order to convince her to date me, I said, "Why don't we go on a training? We'll spend the day training so I could see if you'd qualify for this team." So the first date, I was considering it a date. She was considering it
training,
was an 8-hour kayak. And so I figured if I was out in the boat with her for 8 hours and there was no food or water, she would get delirious and like me. And so from there, I convinced her to then come to one of the races I was doing over in Europe, which led us through on the way to the race or on the way coming out of the race to Monte Carlo. And we were driving by a casino. At this point, we knew each other literally a week. We had been on the 8-hour. We met at the race for a few minutes. We had been on the 8-hour kayak. And now we just flew to Europe and we were in a car and we were getting to the, and I said, "Let's stop in the casino. We'll bet on the roulette wheel. There's a pattern here you're seeing. I like,
I remember this. Yes."
And I said, "If it lands on red 36, my number, we'll get married on the spot. If it lands on black number 8, you leave. We never see each other again." And it hit red 36. It hit my number. So, she called like, "Bullshit, timeout, no way, do it again." And I said, "Okay, if we do it again, if it lands on green 0, you get a tattoo. If it lands on double 0 green, I get a tattoo." So it landed on green 0, she had to get a tattoo. And she started crying as the tattoo artist was about to give her a tattoo. So I took that tattoo for her and we ultimately got married. So it was a good night of gambling.
Courtney Lawson, right?
Yeah.
Why didn't you take your last name?
Why didn't I take her last name?
Oh, why didn't she take your last name?
She did take my last name.
Oh, she did?
Yeah, she took my last name.
Oh, I see. I guess on Well, this is where the website, where the internet is wrong. They are listing her as Courtney Lawson.
Well, she had a little soccer career when she was younger, so maybe she's so famous they have her name. Yeah.
Okay, so then you and a few other people, including one guy who came in fourth at the death race, decide we're going to throw this other race. We're going to do something that's a little bit less murderous and more inclusive, and you decide you're going to call it Spartan. I love in the book Spartan Up, you talk about how you're thinking about different ideas for names, and Spartan really does capture it. And so you start the first one. Who puts together all the obstacles? How do you figure out what to do? How do you get people to come to the first one when there's no history of it?
It was a complete shit show. It was not easy. I had a bunch of friends helping. A buddy of mine was putting on some races where he would get 100 or so people. Everybody chipped in. It got to a point where we were about a month away from the race. There weren't going to be enough people. I was going to lose a ton of money. So I got a couple of college kids to go door to door. One of those college kids still work for us today, but they literally went door to door, knocking on doors, convincing people to consider coming to the race. I think we ended up with 700 or 800 people.
Where was this that you were that he was going door to door?
In Vermont.
In Vermont. So door to door, people in Vermont were so ready for this race that they didn't even need months to prepare?
Yeah, they didn't even run. People were so excited. They were so enamored by this idea of coming out and getting a little adventure. I think our first event we put on was 3 miles that they rolled the dice. They joined some friends and they came out.
What was it? How did you position it? How did you explain it so that people knew what it was? To call it an obstacle race is silly. What's the phrase that you use that got people to understand what you were putting them through?
You know, I think we got really lucky with the name. I think the name Spartan, as you said earlier, really says it all. And it was Spartan Race at that time. We hadn't shortened it to just the word Spartan. So between that and some imagery and some really exciting babble as you spoke to people, right, and trying to convince them and some salesmanship, they got pumped up. There's not a lot to do in Vermont. And so the fact that there was an event up here got them out. And then from there, we went to New York. From there, went to Massachusetts, went to Montreal, went to the UK, and now it's 35 countries and 200 events a year.
Richard Lee was that fourth place person who co-founded Spartan with you. I'm seeing an article here in the Daily Mail about how he lied that he was in the Royal Marine, a Royal Marine.
Yeah, you know, Richard wasn't. I don't really have a negative thing to say about Richard, and I'll explain that to you. When he met me, and let's back up a little bit. So we're knocking on doors, and I meet this guy, and his name's Richard Lee, who comes walking off the Appalachian Trail, because the trail runs a couple of miles from our house here in Pittsfield. And he comes into the general store that I told you I own. And what are you doing? You know, just like we talked to anybody in Vermont. You know, ex-Royal Marine, I broke my leg during Royal Marine train, whatever he called it, because I was not military, so I don't know. Yeah. And we're just hiking the trail, me and my girlfriend. His girlfriend was Salika. I said, well, I'm putting on these races. How would you like to help out? We got this race coming in 3 months. Would you like to jump? You know, he's got his English accent. Yeah, I'm all for it. So he jumps in and he helps out. And as we're getting ready for that event, I'm putting on a death race on the farm. He raises his hand and says, I'm in. I'm going to do the death race as well.
Death race and help you with Spartan.
I'm going to help you with Spartan, and I'm going to compete in the death race. And I said, great, I'm going to compete as well in the death race. And we had, you know, another 100 competitors or so. And one was a U.S. Marine, Tom Worthington. Then you had Richard Lee, who told us he just got out of training in the Royal Marines. And then you had me, and then you had a bunch of other competitors. Well, Tom Worthington, the U.S. Marine, and Richard, the kid we just pulled off the Appalachian Trail, they beat me. They both beat me by like an hour, young bastards. So the news picks it up, and the news goes wild around the world, right? U.S. Marine, Royal Marine tie at the finish line. Well, I suspect, and again, I got nothing bad to say about Richard because he really, I suspect at that moment in time, he obviously knew that he wasn't officially a Royal Marine, but he did go into training. Now, what I understand to be is in the U.S., if you and I joined the Marines, we could call ourselves Marines, even if we didn't finish the basic training. That's what I understand. In the U.K., you can't. In the U.K., you've got to get to that last step and actually pass the test.
I see.
And so my understanding is that even though he put his year in or whatever it was in time, because he didn't finish that, complete that final task, he can't use that word.
When he used it with you because he was just meeting you and just talking and wasn't being official, then the media picked it up and it stuck.
That's my guess. We'll never know because I'm not in his head. But my guess is he was just being friendly and it was really no big deal. He was having a conversation with me. When the news story picked that up and said U.S. Marine Corps, nobody denied. Like, you know what I mean? He wasn't going to say, oh, by the way. Fast forward 2 or 3 years, he pissed somebody off somewhere in the UK. He was running our UK operation, and somebody came after him and said, hey, you're not an official Royal. Anyway, this thing went on and on and on. And ultimately, we spoke to folks in the military. We're very close to the military. We spoke to folks in the military over in the UK, and they said, it's, you know, yeah, he probably should have said something, but boy, the press could really make things, you know, a lot sillier than they should be.
And so he had to leave because
nobody
of that.
Nobody should steal valor. But this was really something that should not have been as big as it was.
And so you asked him to leave. He was no longer part of the organization after that. You couldn't.
Yeah, we asked him to leave. His girlfriend, who became his wife, was just as hardworking as he was. So she stayed on and she ran the operation. And ultimately they went and did something. They actually, funny enough, you're going to laugh, they went off and started a wedding business.
Oh, really?
They were so enamored with the wedding business that I had going on in Vermont. They started one in the UK.
I see photos of him here. I think it's him and his wife. And he's thin. He's super thin. He doesn't look badass.
Don't even upset me that he beat me. he was skinny, little, scrawny guy. And I say that in the nicest possible way. But he was just relentless.
I do see that he's always dirty for some reason. I haven't seen a single photo of him without mud somewhere on his body or more likely on his face. All right. I want to come back and ask you about, was the website, the first website you had, it was SpartanRace.com?
First website we had was probably SpartanRace.com.
Yep. Yeah. I'm looking at it. There's something that just stands out that I got to bring up to you. But first, my sponsor is Active Campaign. If you guys are out there and you understand that you need to do email marketing, and frankly, you should, you know what? I should talk to someone on your digital team because I wonder if you guys are on this. You have a huge email list, don't you?
We have a big email list.
I'm on your mailing list. Everything comes directly from you. I wonder if I do a race, will you follow up and say, hey, Andrew, you did this race last year. We're going to come back again. Or, hey, Andrew, you did a race in this city. We're going to do another one in another city. I want you to fly out. The reason I say this is because you write fantastic. Do you still write the emails yourself?
Not all of them, but yes.
They come like very personal. They actually are readable. It doesn't feel like it's some corporate newsletter. I think you get that right. What Active Campaign will add to your business and other businesses like it is the ability to target. The ability to say, here's a guy who checked out this one race in New York City 5 times, didn't sign up, came back again next month 5 times, didn't sign up. We're going to target that person and say, hey, if you have not signed up for New York, you have an opportunity right now at 5% discount. Or else I'm going to come to your house and I'm going to kick your butt. That ability to target based on what people are doing on the web, what they're doing in email, what they're doing in general allows you to not just write personally, but target personally. You're gearing up to say something. I could see it, Joe. What were you going to say about it?
Well, I was just thinking if they could, what I want to do is I want to have a black Spartan van that shows up at their house and just rip off the couch. So if they could work with me on that, it's a little old school. But I think
bet, it was, you know what? 100% we could set that up and I bet they'd love it. And you know what? My researching skills, I bet I could even find their address and get to their house. I'm looking to see if you're on them. Now you guys have some software, some of it's a little bit older on your site. I'm looking to see what you guys use. Anyway, if you guys are out there and you're looking for email marketing that is smart, that allows you to target based on what people have done on your site, I urge you to check out Active Campaign and I've got a special URL for you. I forgot the URL for the last sponsor. I'll edit it in, I guess. But here's a special URL. If you're a Mixergy listener and you want to target your email properly, I want you to check out this URL where they're going to give you a free trial so you can try it and see the power of doing this. I want you to get this second month free. You're going to get 2 free one-on-one consultants who will actually consultations. Wait, two free consultants are not coming to you. You're going to get two consultations with people who are going to show you how to actually integrate this into your business. In the first call with them, you get to learn, you get to understand, you get a plan. The second call with them, you can talk about what worked in the plan, what didn't, and build on that. So you're going to get two free consultations. And if you signed up with a different email provider before and you want to move over to ActiveCampaign, they're going to migrate you for free. Here's a special URL, activecampaign.com/Mixergy, activecampaign.com/Mixergy. And I promise if you guys want a black van to come to your customers, you can set up a tagging system that will allow you to know where the black vans should actually go. Go check them out, activecampaign.com/Mixergy. I see what you guys did. You guys rolled your own. I'm on your site right now. So you guys have this kind of email system, but somebody built it for you internally. Okay, here's the thing that I saw when I looked at the Wayback Machine.
You know more than I do about my email.
I'm like researching your site as we talk. If you see my eyes dart around because I'm researching you. I see the older version of your site. What I like about races like yours is people want to volunteer. By the way, why? I always assumed you guys were nonprofit because of the volunteers. Why does a for-profit business get volunteers?
First of all, we were the only for-profit that was nonprofit for 15 years.
I know. Our producer asked you about the revenue at some point, and you told her, and then you said, but we're not profitable.
We're not profitable.
Because you're reinvesting in the business. That's an intelligent business decision. But why does a for-profit business get volunteers? Because you can?
Why would a volunteer want to come?
Right. Why would a volunteer work for a for-profit business?
Well, so we give free races away. So if you come and volunteer, you're going to get a free race with us. You're going to get a shirt. You're going to get a meal. Plus, a lot of people want to check it out and want to see what's this all about. Let me go see other people suffer first, get inspired, and then I'll be part of it and I'll get to race for free. So surprisingly, because I'm just as surprised as you are, there's a lot of people out there that want to come out and help. And the reality is we couldn't put on the events without the volunteers. Just it wouldn't happen.
So here's, I see a couple of things on the site, the early version of the site. And it seems like it took you guys a while to actually put together a website, which is shocking. There's like grammatical mistakes on here, not big ones.
Listen, it's amazing that we are as big as we are because everything you could do wrong to ruin a brand, we did.
Like what?
We just screwed the whole thing up. But, you know, in the early days, my assistant said to me, who was, by the way, who was only working for $2,000 a month. I said, the policy when we started was anybody who works for us gets paid $2,000 a month. It doesn't matter.
That's it, no matter what.
Doesn't matter, no matter what. It's $2,000 a month because that's all we could afford. And my assistant, she might not have even been getting paid the $2,000 a month. I don't know. She said, we got to invest in a CRM. You know, what's a CRM? She went through the whole thing. And I said, look, there's only going to be 50,000 people globally that even want to do this. I've been losing money forever on you don't know this, but Spartan and all the races I've been putting on since 2001. So from 2001 to 2015, I lost money. It lost money, right? So there was no way I was going to invest in technology with this continual loss of money. And, in retrospect, I wish I had listened to her because had I had proper systems in place, CRM proper, oh my God, we would be three times, five times what we are today.
I see. But you do today. Today you guys do your own email system. As I mentioned earlier, you've got a proper email list. Let me see. Last count, you guys had what, over 1.5 million subscribers to that email list?
Oh, yeah.
Is it 700,000 people who are downloading the workout of the day that you guys put out?
Yeah.
And that's 700,000 each month or over what period of time are we talking about?
No, so 700,000 people a day get it.
700,000 people via email.
Via email, yeah.
I see. And what was this period there where you were getting close to, where you went through your whole savings? What sent you over the edge?
What sent me over the edge to hang on or what sent me over the edge why I was losing so much money?
Yeah, why were you losing so much money at that point? Because you're a Wall Street guy. You know how to anticipate your expenses.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm a fire-ready aim guy. I'm not an aim-ready fire guy. I did not have a business plan together. This was really a hobby for me. I was still doing Wall Street business when I started putting on races in 2001. So I wasn't completely paying attention to it. So for those of you out there that are getting in business or in business, I think you do a lot better if you focus on the thing you're good at, and whatever you're putting money into, you probably should pay attention to. I was not paying enough attention to this. This was like a side project that I was passionate about. And as such, it just kept bleeding money. Well, in 2010, when I launched the word Spartan, and we shortened the distance to what I was doing to 3 miles, 8 miles, and 13 miles, I realized, oh my God, we got to do digital advertising. We can't knock on doors anymore, right? And so I got this young kid, and he showed me, we went to the Apple store, and I bought an Apple computer, and he showed me how to do this Facebook advertising thing, and we got, you know, a Twitter account, and we got all these things going. Pinterest, I think, was coming around at that time. And we started running some ads. And I went in the hole. I was spending $300,000 a month. And so there's
ads? Or in general?
Well, 80% digital ads.
Wow. Okay.
Retargeting, you name it. And as well as billboards and other stuff. We were spending a fortune. Now, if I had to do that today, that same amount of advertising would probably cost, I'm making up, and it would probably cost you $2 million a month.
Yeah, yeah.
At the time, it was a lot less expensive. There were less people bidding for that inventory. But I don't know how many months in, let's call it 20 months in, my bookkeeper sits me down and says, "What the fuck are you doing? You are virtually out of money. And it's moving so fast, I'm not really paying attention because the expenses are getting ahead of when I'm actually paying them." And I remember skiing with my kids that day. It was a winter day, thinking, man, I worked my whole life. I crushed it. I saved all this money and I just blew it on this race business. I called some friends on Wall Street and I said, "Look, I've got a business I'm doing, this Spartan thing." I said, "You're not going to understand that I don't have a business plan." I said, "I don't have a valuation, but I need money, and I need money by Monday or I'm dead." And they wired a bunch of money, and they saved the day. And that lasted me about 4 months. And then I was up against the wall again, and I realized, oh my God, we could just push out payables. So rather than paying in 30 days, we could pay in 180 days. But we'd collect revenue today. And so we pushed out payables and we said, "Oh, this is just the policy of the company. We pay in 180 days." And vendors that were willing to play along with us, you know, saved us. And then what really saved the day was we got a phone call from a company who wanted to be our back-end processor. And they had been hounding me for a while to be the people that would collect.
Credit card processor.
Credit card processing. And I wasn't interested in changing who we currently had. I had no time for it. And I was up against the wall again financially. And they said, "Look, we'll buy your business. We'll pay you $1 million. And I said, "Really?" I said, you know, it was like a Wednesday. I said, "Well, when would you pay us?" "Oh, well, FedEx, you could have it Friday." And so we'll do that. So they literally sent the check overnight. So that bought us some more time. And then some private equity guys came in. They bought 20% of the company. And the rest is history.
So you own it, the private equity guys own 20% of the company, and the people on Wall Street, were they lending you money or did they end up with a share of the business?
End up with a share of the business.
Share of the business. Wow. Yeah. And so you finally are able to take money out of the business. Do you remember the first time that you took some cash out of the business after over a decade of building it up without taking anything out?
It's over a decade. I took, don't quote me, we're in 2017. I think 2016, I took my first salary check. So it was 15 years in. So for those of you out there that are running businesses, hang in there.
Why are you traveling so much? You just landed. You're doing this interview with me. You're going to travel again. You're all over the place. You're doing a podcast of your own. Why aren't you saying, you know what? This is a business. I got the COO early on. I got a CEO. I guess you at some point decided I'm going to be the CEO too. Why are you traveling so much? You're making a face like I'm disgusting you by saying don't travel so much and sit still.
Yeah, you know, everybody says in some form of life or some meeting I have, why don't you stop and smell the roses? And my mind, when I hear the question, my mind says, who the fuck is going to water the roses, prune the roses, fertilize the roses? Like, it just doesn't work that way. Like, if you want to extreme success requires extreme sacrifice. So like, I'd rather be with my kids and my wife right now, but like, I got to run around. I'm meeting with outside television here in Vermont. We're doing a segment. I got you calling me to do this podcast. We got to build out Western Canada. I had to do Tokyo last year. Like, who's going to do it? You know, we got to do it. I mean, why are you doing your podcast? Why don't you hire somebody to do it?
That I love doing it. I love having these conversations. I think I need to do it because no one can do it better than me. But I do wonder, why am I doing the other stuff? Couldn't somebody else do some of the other stuff? Like, I'm about to go in and edit into your interview that I forgot to do the actual ad for Athletic Greens. So I'm going to record like a 10-second thing and stick it in there. I shouldn't be doing. But you're saying all the stuff that you do is critical. You need to do it.
I mean, listen, if you or I, God forbid, knock on wood, I'm knocking on wood here, got hit by buses, we'd probably be fine. Somebody would pick up where you left off. Somebody would pick up where I left off. And, you know, we're all replaceable. But, I don't know. Maybe I'm just I'm definitely a workaholic. I definitely am addicted.
It seems like it.
You know, I met a guy today. He was like 80, and he's been running his business for 60 years. And I said, what are you doing? And he said, if you don't have purpose in life and you don't wake up looking to go conquer something, he says, you die. So I just want to keep going and live. So I said, all right, I guess I'm on that same path. And so I guess you are too.
All right. You were going to show me earlier around, but we were worried about the internet connection. Do you feel good about now lifting up whatever device I'm talking to you on? Just like, let's take a look around where you are.
Let's see if this works. There's a chance.
Where are we? So you're back at home now?
I'm at home in Vermont. Okay. Let's see what we got here. Hang on.
If we lose you, I'm going to say goodbye right now. It won't be rude. I won't call you back. I'll give you some time to
Me back. If we disconnect, we never talk again. That's the deal.
We'll talk again at dinner or something. Oh, look at that.
You see that?
Yeah. That we didn't have. I grew up in Queens, too. We didn't have that in Queens. Ah, there we go. It's like a red barn.
You're back?
Yeah, kind of. I think you might need to go back inside. I think the connection's not very good out here.
I might be able to get you in here. Let's see. Check out
the video for anyone who's listening and not watching. Just froze on a red barn, beautiful lawn. We might have just lost Joe.
Can you see me?
No, not yet. Want to try turning the video off and on again? That could do it.
Am I with you?
I can. Oh, there. Yeah, now I can see you. So you're back in the house? You're going downstairs?
I'm in the barn. I'm trying to show you. I can't really walk out of the house, but you'd be blown away if I could show you the mountain.
What do you do with that mountain?
We got our own mountain here. We put in a stone staircase. It's 1,000 steps. We made the participants of the death race put in a.
You made the participants put in 1,000 steps.
One year. It's pretty epic. So if you ever come here, you get to run the stairs.
I'd love to try it. All right, and if I come, I will be coming without soda. I will be drinking green juice from now on. No more soda. Joe, I think we've lost the connection here. So if you can hear me, I'm going to say thank you for being on here. If you can't, I'll find a way to send you a text message saying thank you. For everyone who's listening, go check out Spartan.com to get more info. And the two sponsors that I had were activecampaign.com/Mixergy and athleticgreens.com/Mixergy. Athleticgreens.com/Mixergy. Thanks, everyone. Bye.